very kindly promised to come back today to talk about a new year, new story. So thank you, Paul. Most grateful.
Well, my pleasure. First of all, if I disappear for a few seconds or a minute, we've had some internet problems in my area this morning. So just to warn you, but I will be back. So it's a real pleasure to be talking with you again. I see that some of you were at my talk in October, which was about the concept of stories and the stories that we tell ourselves. And I was going to follow that up, but I've decided to change it very much towards what I think is the most important skill that we need as individuals, as families, as neighbours, as communities, as societies in this year, and that is resilience. It's an area I've been teaching for, about 30 years as a psychologist, academic consultant, and I'm doing a series of talks for some clients, both in Europe and North America at the moment. And those clients are big organisations who believe it's resilience is the number one skill they want their employees to have, not just for their work, but even more so for their personal lives. So COVID-19 has been a very sobering experience, and it looks like the next 3 months are going to be the most testing so far. And I want to talk about ways in which we can prepare ourselves for this going forward. Like Carrie, I think this year is going to be the year for green action, but we need to be very strong in ourselves because we've got a huge amount of challenges coming forward, not just dealing with COVID, but dealing, of course, with climate breakdown, with ecological collapse, and with a whole range of other issues. But I think COVID-19 has really revealed some real structural inequalities and problems in society. So we need to prepare, and I want us to think about not just surviving or coping with what's happening now, but how can we actually thrive through this? And that doesn't mean being Pollyanna-ish or just thinking positively. No, it's much deeper than that, because if you think back over your own lives, I suspect that most of the really important turning points, those times when you learned the most about yourself and which you grew the most, were probably more to do with dealing with setbacks, dealing with problems, dealing with challenges, rather than when everything goes right. So I actually think this is a tremendous window of opportunity at the moment for us to learn more about ourselves. But first of all, I want to check in with how you're feeling. So Carrie, if you could put the poll up, please. So if you could just select which of these you're feeling strongly about. So, and then just do that. And when you're finished, end.
I think that's it.
Okay.
End poll.
Looking at that, as it appears real time, hopeful is the predominant feeling. So we have 5 positives, 2 negatives, 4 neither, 1 sure, and 24 hopefuls, which is great. And I suspect if we did this nationally, it would be a lot higher on the negative scale. But within this group, clearly we've got more positive and hopeful people. So the question is, how can we build on that? And in June and then in October, I talked about my book, which was called Significance, that I wrote last year. And the subtitle of the book was How to Refocus Your Life on What Matters Most. And if ever there's been a time in our life to really think about what matters most to us, it's really now. And the question I'd like to ask you all, and if you don't mind, it'd be great if you can add your answers to chat, is what do you think has been your biggest lesson? What have you learnt about yourself since the pandemic started? Maybe, so if you could all mute yourselves as well, that would be terrific. So what's the biggest insight, the biggest lesson you've learnt about yourself in the last 9 months? Because, you know, we're in a new year, and maybe some of you have done this already. I spent a whole day really going through my journals. I journal every day and really trying to think about what did I learn most about myself and about other people and what beliefs have been challenged. But is there anyone, and if you'd like to share, it would be great. Any insights or lessons you've had from this year? Somebody put, I don't mind being bored. Yep, absolutely. We're in a society where we're constantly distracted and constantly stimulated, and it's nice to feel being bored. Value of community, yeah, that was a big thing for me as well. The ability to change our mindset, absolutely, we'll be going through that. Being grateful for what's happening, yeah. So a lot of answers coming through there. And I suspect all of us have had tremendous insights already into ourselves and into our family and our friends. And it's not all been bad. Yes, there's been some terrible news and we're right in the thick of it right now. But also, this has been a period when we've learned a great deal about ourselves. So I want to focus now on what is resilience? And resilience is a term I'm sure you've all heard of, and we think of it in terms of how well we manage setbacks, adversity. We think of resilient people, people who've, you know, been through terrible misadventures, terrible tragedy, and come back. But resilience is far more than that. It's not just about how we react to bad events happening. It's actually more, in many ways, a mindset about how we live. Because resilience is something that we can apply to everything. Yes, we need it for COVID-19. Yes, we need it for our environmental work and for major life events, for getting older, illness, loss. You know, resilience is a great skill, but it's also a skill that we can apply to our everyday challenges we have, like being stuck in a queue, a traffic jam, something not turning up on time, all those minor irritations. It's a mindset that we can apply to everything. And there's certain characteristics of resilience that are very important. First of all is what we call grit. And there's been a lot of research done, particularly by an academic called Angela Duckworth, who's looked at the whole area of grit. And that is the persistence and the determination to do what needs to be done and to finish tasks, even when they're tough. And people who have grit actually genuinely are far more effective in life. And not just in business, but in all areas of life. And it's not a term that you often hear about very much, but there's a very good book, if you're interested, called Grit by Angela Duckworth that I recommend. The second big area, which I'm sure you all know about, is mental toughness. That's being strong and tough under pressure. I'm not just talking about the toughness like military toughness, but in literally every day. And a great question here is, or approach around toughness, is not asking why me, but instead asking what now. That's a great mindset about focusing on action. So people who are mentally tough tend not to dwell on why things have gone wrong or feeling like a victim, but they focus more on taking action and not really trying to understand why they're stuck, but more on getting unstuck. But my favorite word for resilience is a word which those of you who know about Buddhism or practice mindfulness will know well.
In that carry here.
Yourselves, please, everyone. If everyone could mute, that would be great. And it's equanimity, a beautiful word, probably my favourite word in many ways. And equanimity is that ability to be calm and balance and serene even, whatever life is throwing at you. This is the aim of enlightenment, the aim of Buddhism, but it's also the aim of resilience. It's having a mindset where nothing disturbs your peace of mind. And about 20 years ago, I met somebody who was just going into a hospice very near the end of their lives, and they'd been through the most terrible adversity, probably more adversity than anyone I'd ever met in terms of losing family, dealing with illness and many other events. And their mantra for everything was never letting anything disturb their peace of mind. And they had more wisdom and serenity than anyone I'd ever met. So again, it's a proof that it's not what happens to you, it's how you respond to it. And through their adversity, they have become far more serene and accepting. So equanimity is a characteristic of resilient people. Another characteristic, and one which is interesting enough for those of you who are at work, is there was a big survey of CEOs done on LinkedIn last year, and I've seen this in other surveys, and they asked what was the number one quality that employees needed for the next 10 or 20 years, and their answer was adaptiveness or agility or adaptability. And this is also those of you who have children or, you know, student. Young people, you know, this is such an important quality that every employer is looking for. And resilient people are adaptive. They learn and they grow from problems. They experiment. They're very flexible. They go, they bend, they don't break, to use a well-known saying. And they thrive. They don't just survive, they thrive under pressure. And we all need to be able to flourish through these very chaotic, troubling times at the moment. And in many respects, I'm going to really commit myself here. I teach a whole range of skills, of habits, and I just recently designed a master's course in leadership and organizational behavior. And the point I made very strongly was that resilience is the number one skill in life. I strongly believe this, and I believe it even more after the last year. And hopefully, as I go through this, you'll see why I think it's so important. So some people are naturally resilient, but above all, resilience is a set of skills. And by the way, I should say at this point, if you have any questions, please put them in chat, and I might well answer them in a moment, but we'll certainly have plenty of time at the end to go through any of these things. So resilience is a set of skills that we can all learn. And I want to go through what I think are some of the most useful practices. Now, I talk about practices rather than skills, because practices are things that we can do every day. And the only way we change anything in life is not by through intention or through knowledge, but it's through practice. And then through practice, these skills become habitual. So I want to give some very powerful and proven skills of being more resilient. The first one is to gain perspective. Now, I thought a lot recently about my own family, and I'd like to go back with you 100 years. Now, you've all heard of Spanish influenza. Well, in 1920, I'd like to give you some background about my family. Both my grandfathers fought in the First World War. In fact, through some extraordinary synchronicity, they arrived in different boats on August the 15th, 1915. One in the Lancashire regiments in one boat, and my other grandfather in a Surrey regiment in another boat. They both arrived at Gallipoli. And within a week, my maternal grandfather was shot in the head and lost his eye and was very lucky to live. And about a week later, my paternal grandfather got dysentery and was basically laid out on the beach to die, not expected to survive. They obviously both did survive. They both had terrible challenges and died very young. And at the same time, my paternal grandmother, she lost her brother in the First World War, and she lost her fiancé in the first 2 weeks of the First World War. So for my family, 100 years ago, it was a terrible time. And of course, what else happened 100 years ago? We had Spanish influenza. And Spanish influenza killed conservatively 50 million people. At a time, the population was less than a quarter of what it is now. Now, I talk about this because sometimes we need to get perspective. If you watch the news all day, every day, it's very easy to get in the perspective that we're all doomed, because and our perception of risk can get really skewed by watching the news and by reading certain blogs, going on social media all the time. Yes, it's very bad what's happening now, but we are still very fortunate to be at a time where we've been able to create a vaccine very quickly. And it's getting perspective is very, very important. There's a well-known phrase, I've seen it on T-shirts, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. And the problem is many of us tend to catastrophize about things, and it's very easy to do that at the moment. So one of the skills of resilient people is they put things in perspective. And some simple techniques for doing this are to, first of all, write it down. The worst thing you can do when you're worried or anxious about anything is to keep it in your head. The simple act of writing it, and this is why I tell all my clients, everyone I work with, to always keep a journal, is it really helps you just to get the idea out of your head. And just the act of writing it down is sometimes all you need to eradicate the worry. So write it down and be very specific in what you're thinking and what you're feeling. Notice where you're feeling it. Is it in your stomach or is it in your head? And the more sensory you can get, the better. And think of other times that you've been worried about things. And as you know, most of the things we worry about don't actually happen. But by writing it down, we can really reduce the feeling of angst and worry. And really helps us, you know, to do what Kipling so well advised us, to meet everything with triumph, and meet triumph and disaster as the same foe. And they are. And it's that being practicing equanimity and just dealing with it in a very detached way. The next skill, and I'd like to know who here, perhaps in the chat box, practices mindfulness in any shape or form, whether it be meditation, whether it be yoga, whether it be anything where you are being mindful. I see a few people saying this, and I suspect quite a few of you on the group do. It's amazing. Most environmentalists I meet actually do practice mindfulness. There's a very strong corollary, so that's great. Lots of people doing yoga. Well, you'll know a lot of this already, but I want to give you some very specific techniques which you might not know. So resilient people stay calm under pressure, and the best way to do that is to be mindful, is to be calm, to be focused, whatever life throws at you. And what we often do, our natural reaction to most stressful events is to go into three stages. Fight, we're angry, we're bitter, we're trying to argue with reality. Secondly, flight, we want to run away, we want the world to be different, or we go into denial. And the third area is we freeze, we feel helpless, we feel anxious, we ruminate, and we're confused about what to do. And for me, mindfulness with resilience is stepping out of those three states, is stepping away and saying, okay, what's a better way not to react to what's happening, but to respond? We react when we stay in those three natural states of fight, flight, or freeze. Those are evolutionary states. They were designed for us, you know, for us to cope, for us to survive. And they're very useful if we're being chased, but they're not so useful if we're watching the news, or if we're in a traffic jam, or we're dealing with a queue. You know, it's inappropriate. So we need to step back and think, what is the best way to respond to this? And that's the first step. And then there's some very specific techniques I want to give you. The first of these is called box breathing. Now, box breathing was developed in the military, actually, for dealing with PTSD. And it's a very simple technique, which some of you might know. And it's got various forms and numbers. But in its simplest form, it's what we call 5-5-5. So when you start to feel anxious or fearful or worried about anything, just stop and breathe in for 5. Hold for 5. And breathe out for 5. Now, one of the keys to mindfulness and resilience is when you are rooted in a present moment, when you are breathing deeply, it's very hard to be anxious too. Anxiety is all about being in your head. That's where it happens. Yes, it leads to feelings in the body, but when we shift from being in our heads to in our bodies and really noticing our physical feelings, you will start to feel more relaxed. And just repeating that simple technique, it's like a band-aid, it's an emergency, simple technique you can use. But now I'd like to introduce you to something else which you might not be so familiar with, and that's what we call the 90-second rule. Now, this is a very interesting concept, and if you've ever seen a wonderful TED talk by Jill Bolte Taylor called The Stroke of Insight, you'll know about this. Now, Jill Bolte Taylor was a neuroscientist who had a stroke, and I won't give the whole talk away because you really ought to watch TED Talk, but she examined what happened, and it was really a life-changing experience, but in many ways that you wouldn't imagine. And what she writes about is there's basically, when we have a shock or trauma or feel any really strong emotions, there's a 90-second chemical process that happens in the body. And after that, any remaining emotional response tends to dissipate. But what we do, instead of letting it go, like animals do in the animal kingdom, they deal with these things far better than we do. We ruminate, we think about it, we dwell on it, we try and find reasons for it. We know, we catastrophize about it, and we make it far worse. What Jill is saying, what other neuroscientists are saying is, and this is a technique I practice for years myself, is if we just focus after something happens, after that trigger, for 90 seconds, just breathing deeply and just letting go, the emotions will normally tend to disappear. Now, that's not going to happen with the most extreme emotions necessarily, and you might not always want the emotions. You know, if something really tragic has happened, maybe it's not appropriate, but for most emotions, it's very appropriate because what happens is we get fully engaged and we think about what we're feeling and we look for reasons and we make it far worse. And we have all this self-talk going on, which causes the problems, which is why mindfulness is so important. But if we just leave it for 90 seconds, just experiment and notice what happens. And a technique I teach alongside this, which is for me very, very powerful, is to keep on saying to yourself, it's just a thought. Now, that's such a simple phrase, it's just a thought, but it's actually very profound, because most of what we're doing in our lives is we're, and this comes back to my work with stories, we're telling ourselves stories all the time. We're telling ourselves a story about why me? Oh my God, I'm a victim. Oh no, it's happening again. We're telling stories about why this person did that or didn't do this or what's happening in the news. And we've got all this narrative running in our minds. But at the end of the day, it's not real, most of it. It's our interpretation of what we think is happening. It's not reality. And our ability to step back from that and just say to ourselves, it's just a thought, is very powerful. And I use this technique 50 to 100 times a day. And in fact, I trained about 1,000 people at a corporation over the last 2 years in Canada. And they did a survey of what techniques they found the most helpful. And this won by a mile. It was actually the simplest technique I taught, but it was the most useful. It's just a thought. And a technique which, again, I use, which is a little bit more, not sophisticated, but it's another way of looking at this, which I really love, is called relax and release. Now, that can be used in many settings, but in this sense, it's for dealing with anxiety and resilience. And relax, when things happen, go back to that box breathing, go back to that breathing deeply, but the release part is the key. And it's to almost imagine yourself stepping away from a problem. So you've got the problem here, you know, I'm feeling this or this is happening or I'm worried about this. Just step away. Just feeling yourself, separating yourself from it, as opposed to getting yourself really involved. This is a great technique if you have conflicts or if you have any disagreements with people. It's just to imagine, I mean, even physically step back, but if not, just imagine yourself separating and going back. And another great technique, has anyone here heard of Byron Katie? She wrote a book and it's called The Work. And she actually gives this all away free online. And I don't agree with everything she writes, but this is a very powerful technique. And she has four simple questions that she asks. Now, I'm really condensing this down, but I recommend you go to a site, have a look at it. And what she says is, when you have a negative thought or a worrying thought, ask these questions. First of all, is it true? Oh, is it true that, Jim really doesn't like me or isn't returning my calls? Then the next question is it absolutely true? And so often we think things are happening and they're not. We have these interpretations. And they're completely wrong. We don't know what's happening in Jim's life, but we're assuming all these things. And this technique gets you to really challenge them. And the third one is, how does thinking this belief make you feel? How does thinking that Jim isn't returning your calls make you feel? And the final question, my favorite one, is who would you be without this thought? Because what she's doing is getting you to realize that you are creating your own story. You are creating your own reality. So these simple techniques all work extremely well. So just to recap, box breathing, 5-5-5. The 90-second rule, just give it 90 seconds and notice what happens. Say to yourself during that time, it's just a thought. Just say it to yourself. Relax and release. Just step away from a problem. Just let it go. And if you want to go a bit further into this, try Byron Katie's work. And it's all free. It's all online, called The Work. So those are my go-to techniques that I use and that I teach and work extremely well. And I often think that life skills are a bit like learning the piano or how to drive or tennis. It is about learning and mastering a series of skills and techniques. And if you really practice these, I can personally guarantee you that you will feel more resilient. You will be stronger. And you won't just feel more resilient when things go wrong. You'll actually be building your resilience muscles. You'll be building your capacity to be more resilient as you go forward. Now, the third practice is what I call a growth mindset, which is based on a psychologist called Carol Dweck, based at Stanford. Again, some of you might have heard of her work. But it's also in resilience terms. There's a very powerful phrase I'd like to use now, which I've done a lot of work in. And just as an aside, I helped a client of mine write a book where she interviewed 50 of the world's most resilient people. And what I mean by that, these are people who survived terrorist attacks, who lost all their family in accidents, who became quadriplegic, who went through problems you can't even imagine. They were so bad, some of it, really terrible events. But they're all people who didn't just bounce back from these terrible tragedies, they actually bounced forward. And this is a concept I want to talk about, the concept of bouncing forward, so that you don't just bounce back to the old normal, to use that phrase, but you bounce forward to a new, better normal. That is, the setbacks, the resilience, the way you interpreted, the way you learned from these problems made you stronger, so you could bounce forward. And resilient people really embrace problems, they embrace challenges. And again, coming back to what I said earlier, if you think back over your life and just put yes, if this makes any sense, think of the times where you grew most as a person. And if it was from a setback or a problem or failure or a loss, put yes in. And if not, put no. Maybe you do the opposite. But I suspect, based on my work, most people would put yes. And I'm seeing a lot of yeses come up. And again, this is not something they tell you at school. Oh, God, I wish every child was taught resilience. I really do. I mean, so much of the junk we're taught at school, and I was at university until 23. So, I mean, I really use so little of it. But these are the skills that really make all the difference. And there's a wonderful phrase which I use a lot, and it's based it's a quote from the wonderful poet Rumi. Live life as if everything is rigged in your favour. Live life as if everything is rigged in your favour. That's the growth mindset. That's the right resilient attitude, that you welcome everything and think, what can I learn from this? How can I grow from this? People with a growth mindset were people, this concept from Carol Dweck at Stanford, she was very interested in why certain children, particularly in the poorest neighbourhoods, did so much better at school than others. She looked at IQ, she looked at parenting, she looked at age, she looked at a whole series of variables and just couldn't find the patterns and the explanations. So she developed this hypothesis that the children who did best had what she called a growth mindset, that they were naturally, they learned, but if they made a mistake, they learned from it rather than having a fixed mindset, which is to be very defensive, blame other people, be in denial. And she found that those children, and she's been doing this research for nearly 30 years, those children who had a growth mindset, tracking them through life, were far more successful academically, had better jobs, had better relationships, were generally happier and more fulfilled people than people who had a fixed mindset. We all know people have a fixed mindset. I'm doing it my way. Very defensive, in denial. I'm not going to change. It's the world's fault. And the fact is, you know, when we do control tests, most people do have a fixed mindset. You know, it's not as black and white as that. It's on a spectrum. But a growth mindset, for me, is one of the most important skills for being resilient. It's the ability to be always learning, always experimenting, seeing failure as feedback rather than taking everything personally. And it's responding, not reacting to what happens. And I just want to share a simple slide that talks about this within the COVID. Let me just share the screen. Right, so this is really explains where are you? It's a great way to look at things. Where are you? It's talking about COVID-19, but it could be in anything. Are you in the fear zone? And in COVID, you know, it's being scared, it's being worried. This was at the beginning, hoarding food, toilet paper, those good old days. Then are you in the learning zone? That's where you're learning about yourself and you're really becoming more self-aware, which is, again, another characteristic of resilient people. But the area to really be in is in the growth zone. And that's finding a purpose, thinking about how you can help others. And I'll come back to some of these in a moment. Being more in the present, being more grateful, adapting to changes, being calmer, patient, relationships. But it's a very simple way of thinking with a growth mindset. Are you practicing a growth mindset at the moment? Are you in a fear zone, a learning zone, or the growth zone? And the more you can be in the growth zone, the more resilient you'll be and the happier you'll be. and the more effective you'll be. And not just for yourself, but for all the work we're doing in communities, for all the work we're doing to do with the environment, be in that growth zone. So, sorry, I just lost my place here. The final area I want to talk about is, two more areas, is helping others. Resilient people are people who really focus not on thinking about themselves the whole time, but thinking about other people. And I'm sure every one of us here has gained tremendous strength from working with neighbours, working in the community, working in environmental groups, being part of this wonderful group, and, you know, working with great people like Carrie. You know, it's so uplifting when you have a cause bigger than yourself. And people who are very fragile, which is really the opposite of resilience, are people who are very introspective and really worrying about themselves the whole time and not having that bigger purpose, having that bigger meaning to their lives. And that comes back a lot to what I talked about last year, which was really the power of stories. So going forward in 2021, it's good to think about what you can do to really focus on helping others. What's your resolution for this year? What's your goal for this group, for the other groups you're in? How are we going to make the world a better place? And the more energy we can put in that, the more resilient we'll be. And it's a virtuous circle. The more resilient we are, the more we can help people. The more we help people, the more resilient we become. So it's a great place to be. And the final practice is coming back to my work I did on stories. We are meaning-making creatures, and we all have a story about 2020. We have a story about what happened, why it happened, what it meant for us, what it meant to our loved ones. And we all have a story about where we're going in terms of going forward. And it's really, this is probably the best time in your life right now, this pause we've had in life, to really sit back and think about your story. Because this is the big idea here. It's your story that's making you happy or sad, focused or restless, motivated or disengaged. It's not what's happening to you. It's not your circumstances. It's not your job, your relationships. It's not even COVID-19. It's the story you're telling about it. So, as I said before, in October, change your story and change your life. And COVID-19 has changed everything. We don't know what's going to happen this year. We can't control our events, but we can control our response. We can control our mindset, and we can be a lot more resilient. So I really feel if ever there was a time right now to decide what you really want. You know, I was going to talk a bit about resolutions, but I find that resolutions often is a complete utter waste of time, as most of us will never meet them, and often we put down things we think we ought to do rather than what we really want. But I want to leave you with these questions: is what matters to you most now? And if you really truly loved yourself, how would you live this year? What would you do this year? There's a wonderful phrase from Hygge, which is the Scandinavian approach to happiness. And I know some of my friends on this call really love this phrase, is do what makes your soul shine. What really makes your soul shine? Because if you can figure that out, you will be naturally far more resilient. How do you want, instead of having a resolution about losing weight, being fitter, making money, whatever it is, have your resolution about that. What makes your soul shine? How do you want to feel every day?